Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and it is Sunday at a slightly different time than our scheduled time. But we are here and very happy to be here with a beautiful source that Justin has brought today by the amazing Rainer Maria Rilke, translated by Anita Barrows and Giovanna Macy. And as usual, we are going to be entering in to the conversation with our good and open
hearts and wondering where this is going to go and how it's going to unfold. Just for anybody who might be new here today, just to say you're very, very welcome here with us. And anybody who has been here for a while, of course, your listening and your continual support in this makes this what it is. So thank you for being here and for finding yourself in the things that we say as well. We are firmly believing that this is a conversation between all of us, not just us two. And so your comments and your feedback and the way that this lands with you always means something to us. So if you feel like commenting, if you feel like telling everybody else about us, whatever you would like to do about that, we are very, very welcoming of all of that. So thank you for being our community and for being with us. And let's see where this takes us.
Thank you so much, Lizzie. I want to remind everyone that we have an email address now. So if you're not on Facebook and you're a podcast listener or a YouTube follower or something, you can just email us at hello@turningtowards.life. So that's the same address as our website, which has all the films of our conversations on it. So that's hello@turningtowards.life. We would love to hear from you. And here is our source for this week. Again, always findable. If you're listening to a recording, we'll post it with a podcast or we'll post it on the website. And if you're here with us live on Facebook, it's in the Facebook group. And this is, I believe, In All That Has Never Yet Been Spoken by Rainer Maria Rilke. And I want to say a little bit, Lizzie, before I read this, about how come this week. So we're doing this at 3:30 in the afternoon UK time instead of our normal Sunday morning because, as you know, Lizzie, we are on the fourth day of the last session of our year-long coaching program. And everyone's been, who's a participant in the program, has been stepping in this weekend and letting everyone in the program see their coaching. And we've been talking to everyone and helping people take the next steps in their development. And so often for all of us, of course, I include myself in this, it's such a big step in our development to find what it is that we haven't said yet, to find that of ourselves that we haven't brought into the world yet. And I so think that all of our work, coaching and helping people to do this work with other people, is really about helping what hasn't been born into the world get born. So it just felt like the one to bring on this particular day, given what we're in the middle of. So, I believe in all that has never yet been spoken. I want to free what waits within me, so that what no one has dared to wish for may for once spring clear without my contriving. If this is arrogant, God forgive me, but this is what I need to say. May what I do flow from me like a river. No forcing and no holding back, the way it is with children. Then in these swelling and ebbing currents, these deepening tides moving out, returning, I will sing you as no one ever has, streaming through widening channels into the open sea.
I believe in all that has never yet been spoken. I want to free what waits within me, so that what no one has dared to wish for may for once spring clear without my contriving. If this is arrogant, God forgive me, but this is what I need to say. May what I do flow from me like a river, no forcing and no holding back, the way it is with children. Then in these swelling and ebbing currents, these deepening tides moving out, returning, I will sing you as no one ever has, streaming through widening channels into the open sea.
Oh my goodness, Lizzie, hearing you read this and reading it myself. So I've read this poem a lot of times because it's been sort of waiting in the wings. It's so different to read it, and it's so different to read it today and then to hear it from you. And what happened for me in reading it is that when I got to the line, "The way it is with children," I could feel a great upwelling of longing and grief coming up. Because it's true, right? If we're, when we're children, if we've come into the world in a nurturing enough environment, then for a while, there's no forcing and no holding back. Just what is there to come through comes. And the grief part in it in me is all the ways that I learned not to do that, not because of any malice on anyone's part, but because of the necessary and really ordinary process of getting socialized. Like, we don't do this here and we don't do this here, and here's how to be polite and here's how to fit in and here's how not to get thrown out and here's how not to get shamed and here's how not to get bullied and here's how not to think people have people think you're strange and here's all of that. You know, there's so much, as I'm talking with you about it and reading the poem, it's putting me back into contact with how much there is in us. There's so much in us. So I'm really moved then by Rilke's words, "I want to free what waits within me so that what no one has dared to wish for may for once spring clear." This is the other part of it for me, is realizing that there's sort of two difficulties with this. So one is the difficulty that starts with, and we grow up in a culture and a family and a society and everything that we have to leave out. But the other part of it is that even if we work with that, sometimes what's so difficult about it is our demand that we know ourselves. Like, I am this kind of person or that kind of person. And right now, as I'm talking to you, I can feel, oh my goodness, the shouting and yelling and singing and raging and longing and playing and, you know, all of the ways I barely know myself and how they want to burst out too.
Gosh, as you're speaking this, I'm getting this kind of overwhelming remembering or some kind of understanding of all the undoing that has to happen. For, like, so this poem calls me in my undoneness. Like to think that there has anything that hasn't yet been spoken and that I could believe in that. Just that sentence is an invitation that in order for me to entertain it, I feel like undoing has to happen just in that sentence in me. So all of the things that you were talking about that happen in our socialization, the work to free ourselves up from, and also keep the parts that are useful, but free ourselves up from whatever the thing that really hit me, Justin, when you were speaking, is this is how you do things so people don't think you're weird. You know, like that part of it was, you know, there's some things that are to do with, I mean, it's all to do with safety in a way, isn't it? But there are some things to do with, like, not your body not being run over or something. But there are other things to do with the kind of social safety and kind of safety that has been passed through our lineage about weirdness or about what's normal or what we should be like or something. And that stuff is so hard to unpick, and it's so necessary in order for us to respond to a call that isn't obvious, you know, to think of what hasn't ever yet been spoken. Like, it's a huge big possibility, like it's a huge big open space of unknownness, unknowingness. And to even entertain that that even exists takes such a lot of undoing, because we've been in the pursuit of certainty for so long. And this is painting an uncertain realm that is alive and real, and that we can feel in the reading of it. Like, we can, our yearning kind of goes, oh yes, I can find myself in here. But to find myself in the belief in all that has never yet been spoken, in the possibility of the world, in the what hasn't happened yetness, to believe in that, it's like I have to shed so many things that are kind of, you know, last week we were talking about the baked earthness of ourselves, like the bits that are kind of hardened, that are kind of calcified, that they are hard to get through. They're not permeable yet. I can feel how much of that impermeability needs addressing in order for us to really let ourselves into this realm of the never yet been spokenness. And how all those things that you were talking about there, we have to examine those things. And just because we were given them doesn't mean they were what served us best. Of course, most probably the intention of the people who were serving us with those boundaries and those things and those ways of thinking were trying to protect us, trying to save us, trying to do all of the good intentioned things. And yet there is a point at which we have to see and examine what needs to be let go of and what we need to be beyond, so that we can live into this possibility that we could live in a way where there was no forcing and no holding back. And we could dance like we mean it, rather than I'm dancing because of what you might think of me, or to impress you, or to look good, but that I'm dancing as a truthful expression of this piece of life moving through the world. And what might that be like? And what might I have to let go of in order to feel that kind of freedom?
Dancing is such a great example for me, because first of all, one way or another, very early on, I found out that dancing was a place that I would get shamed. And here's the thing that I want to pick up on. Actually, I realized one part of this in what you said is, you know, the people who gave us boundaries didn't even necessarily give us the boundaries that we ended up with. They did their best. Very often they did their best to respond to whatever circumstance. And then we, because we really naturally have all of these parts of us that go, keep safe, stay in, don't get rejected, all of those, we invent our own protective, some really sophisticated protective ways. So nobody ever said to me, don't dance. In fact, mostly people said to me, why aren't you dancing? But one way or another, I have lots and lots of parts of me that got really wary about this, and it took me a really long time to be able to dance again. And I notice how often when I'm dancing, there's a part of me that's trying very hard to be the one who can dance without being self-conscious about dancing, which is so different to what Rilke's asking us to do, you know, inviting yes. that what I might do might flow from me like a river, no forcing and holding back. Like, there's a part of me watching how I'm doing with the project of being someone who's not self-conscious. It's so hard. It's so, so hard. And I really want to sort of acknowledge the hardness, like the longing that we have, and how contorted our inner, as well as sort of the social surround we're in, but our inner machinations get about,
mm-hmm.
is this okay and isn't this okay, and trying to work out the okayness or not. So I love your language of sort of being permeable. And I'm also finding out in myself, one of the things I've been finding out really recently is that the parts of me that are super protective actually are pretty tired of being protective. So if I don't try to override them, if I don't try to force them out of the way, but if I address them with dignity and wonder with those parts of me, what are you up to? What are you trying to protect me from? And What do you really want to do? Like, if you didn't have to protect me from feeling ashamed when dancing or singing or talking or writing or moving or, you know, whatever, what would you be up to? And most often what I find out is that those parts of me just really long to play.
Mm-hmm.
In exactly the way that I think that's why it's so moving for me, in exactly the way when Rilke says the way it is with children, that's actually really what's longed for. It's the deep, deep longing is to, I think, the life has in us and through us is to express itself. And it's the deep longing of all of the parts of us that got exiled and all of the parts of us that try and keep us safe. I suppose, Lizzie, particularly in the context of this weekend, what we're up to, I'm reminded again of that we don't have to do this on our own, that one of the things we can be for one another is, you know, to be for you, the person who really genuinely does everything I can to take a stand for believing in all that has never yet been spoken, which means me doing my work, not to have you have to be a particular way, like all the ways I know you and all the ways in which parts of me think I love you because you do X, Y, or Z, or you like A, B, or C, to drop down into a much, much deeper kind of welcome and love for you and the life that you are. And then, of course, in order to do that for you, I also have to be really, really kind to all the parts of me that get ashamed when you step out because they're reminded of my difficulties with stepping out. You know, all of this, we have to work with all of this. But what it is to be that for one another, to say, I believe, Lizzie, in all that has never yet been spoken through you.
Mm.
I believe in so much more of you than either of us know now. It's why I feel very committed to coaching, at least the way that we are thinking of it, because it's that stand for another human. But I think it's a stand that we can bring to other humans everywhere in our life if we choose to.
Yeah.
And I think we really need it, because there's so much that we don't know how to do or how to respond to or how to feel or how to say. And just like Rilke says, what if we are the ones who are committed to everyone around us, singing as no one ever has, streaming through widening channels into the open sea.
So I feel like I'm kind of on the edge of being able to say something, and I'm just going to give it a go. But it feels like, from what you're saying, there's an invitation here to live in the space of, and like you might be being like you're being, and I might have all my responses to that, and you know, ordinary humanness will exist between us of conflict and judgment and all the things. But my sense is that this poem is an invitation to, like, that's all there and it will be there and we can be with that. But it doesn't mean that that's where everything stops. There's a place that doesn't need any of that to go anywhere, but that can exist as a possibility alongside everything else, which is that you might say, well, this is just how I am. And that might be your truth. And for me to see something bigger than just your small definition of who you think you are and what's possible for you, for me to hold that for myself and for you, at least the space is held as a possibility rather than it just not being. So it's not like we would be trying to change somebody, but that we would be envisioning something larger, a bigger space than is currently perceived by maybe even you and I, just in our ordinary day-to-dayness. But this kind of conversation and this kind of reflection, this kind of invitation in this poem shows me my never yet spokenness that can be in service to your never yet spokenness, that is a more awake relationship to what life in all of its fullness might be, rather than a kind of small definition of what's possible for us, given what's happened to now. So when we're with people, you know, like in our space today, Justin, in our coaching program, for us to be in support of holding a different possibility that than someone can see for themselves, and then inviting inquiry and reflection and practices and wonderings and poetry and reading and learning things. So many times I experience on the program, Justin, when people say, I don't know what this is, what are we doing, I don't understand. And in that moment, it's like we have to be right there with the non-understanding, and also holding something much, a bigger, deeper perspective for both of us, so that there is somewhere to live into. Like, it seems this whole all that has never yet been spoken realm, it feels so true to me when I read that sentence, and it's true to my experience of working with people and working with myself. Like this, for example, Justin, turning towards life lived in the never yet spoken space forever until it didn't. But this was there, this was possible, this became possible, this was born out of stepping over some threshold of readiness to unknown and to see. And then this thing that we have in our hands now is a self, a collection of words, sounds, meanings, poems, song lyrics, that is in this realm. We stepped into something that was unknown, and we are still seeing what gets born out of it. And so if we didn't have a kind of sense of what might have been possible, we would have not done it. We would have stayed in the whatever the circle we were in of what we thought was possible and what we thought we could do. And then we started doing this, and then we realized there was a whole world of possibility, and that we could keep doing it, and that there would be a never-ending list of sources we could bring, so far never-ending, although I repeated a couple, didn't I, because my brain's a bit addled. But, you know, broadly never-ending, different things each week. And that we get to free what waits within us in this conversation. So I think this is also kind of a testament to the never yet spokenness as well, which is so comforting to me that there's something that's real that exists like this, that I have like a proper example in me now, because it could sound like mystical or something. And yes, it is mystical. And it's also really average and normal and grounding and everyday.
So that, everything you said is really important, but that you just said really sort of opened something in me. Because why I think we long for what Rilke writes about is because it's the heritage of being a human, is that we are these beings that are radically open. Like, there's so many ways to live and so many ways to feel and so many ways to see and so many ways to think and so many ways to relate. And so we're open to possibility all the time. It's one of the, and that's what life is as well. I mean, life is unfolding all the time into new forms and new possibilities, finding a way wherever it can. And I think that we're just life. We're a particular form, and a form of life that, because we can be in relationships and because we feel and because we have language and because we have longing and because we, that the space of possibilities for us is different to other living things. And so it's a very joyful feeling to feel that, and also right now, Lizzie, to feel how this conversation and this practice that we have, so this is a practice of making stuff up or of finding out or of discovering or of living things through, it's so useful to have practices like that, whether it's improvising or writing or painting or dancing, or, and it's so good to have other people. So I think I wouldn't be sitting here having anything like this conversation if I was trying to do it on my own, for example. It wouldn't make any sense. It could never happen. Not in this way. But it also makes me wonder about the And it's also human to want to belong, and it's also human to not be shamed, and it's also human to want to feel safe, and it's also human to want to not enter into realms where we're gonna, where we don't know how things are going to turn out. Like, there's that of us which really wants to know how things are going to turn out and would, and wants to plan and everything. And I suppose for me, that's the and that you're talking about, is can we, I suppose there's a version of this that is like the mystical transformation. You know, one day I'm going to sort of wake up and I'm going to open a door in myself and I'll find out that I'm a completely other person to the person I am, and I'll set off on some new path. But I think the and is like living inside the and, or including the and, feels so much more dignified, which is everything I've been in my life so far and all the commitments that I'm in the middle of, as long as they are, remain important to me. They are my commitments. They are what I care about. There are people I care about and projects I care about and a home that I care about. And can I not have that be the end of it?
Yeah.
So honoring those and unfolding into the, gosh, you know, it's so, I just feel so filled with so much whenever I turn and look at Rilke's words. May what I do flow from me like a river. Like, what a joy and a relief and a release, and a, to not be forcing and not be holding back the way it is with children. And as we've said before, there are the dishes to be washed and the bills to be paid and people I love. And I think, though, that I think for one reason or another, maybe it's one of these sort of big societal forces of the times that we're in that we often talk about, the sort of the meta narrative of our time, that we live in narratives of the best thing to do is to learn to fit in. And the best thing to do is to long for this, but to imagine that it will happen one day somewhere, rather than as a sort of process of living into it.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the thing. One way to read Rilke is not like I'm going to have this sudden, suddenly going to wake up and I'll be flowing like the ocean, but more like, can I live a life and be with people where I can, and be the kind of person where I can, that that attends to this, so that more and more as my life goes on, the swelling and ebbing currents, the deepening tides moving out and returning, have a place in my life alongside what would might otherwise dominate, which is in a sense making ourselves much too small in order to fit into the story of our time.
Oh gosh, Justin, as you were talking, I just had this really big connection back into being told that I just made everything up. You know, I don't know if you've ever had an experience where someone goes, well, you've just completely made that up. And in the way that it got said to me, so you, a couple of sentences ago, you said, you know, we're just making this up. And I suddenly thought, oh my God, I can feel that place in me, that part that interpreted then, from then on, that my making stuff up was really not a very good thing. And now coming at it from this point of view, and you having just brought that to me, I really feel kind of shocked, because in my reality now, I don't think anything else is happening apart from making stuff up. So I'm really kind of shocked in this moment. And I feel really seen by this beautiful Rilke poem, because it's almost affirming the fact that we are just making stuff up. There isn't like a bank of data that we take things from that's acceptable, and the rest of it is just a load of old codswallop. It's like our creation, our creativity, our generation of stuff from our being, and making things up. Like, what's more beautiful than that? What's more beautiful than an incredible story that got made up? What's more beautiful than a piece of art that got made up, of a conversation that got made up, of a piece of clothing that got made up, of a hairdo that got made up? It's like, it's all made up. And I think I need to think about this more, because I feel like there's a really big underpinning belief that there's something that I should be doing that isn't made up. And I can kind of feel myself on the edges of it at the moment. Of, I feel like I have a path that I'm supposed to be on and I'm trying to be on it, but that me making it up, somehow I've believed that it hasn't been, like, that's not the way to do life. And in this moment, I'm just kind of feeling really wide-eyed and like, well, if it's all made up and it's mine to make up, how does that change things? Like, what if I am the maker of my life rather than trying to scrabble around in the dark for the thing that's mine to be or to have or to do? And yeah, I can feel it's quite a kind of bedrocky place in me. Like, I've hit a place of, oh my gosh, if I look into that some more, something quite large will shift in my perception of what it means to be myself and to be a human being as well.
Such a lovely place to end, Lizzie, on that invitation of yours. And I'm left, as we close, with this imagining and this wondering about what if really to be human is to make up that which will bring life, and that which will heal us and other people around us, and that which will inspire, and that which will deepen and love, and that which will have, I'm just going to quote Rilke again, allows us to sing life as no one ever has.
Yeah.
That's what we're here to do. That includes everything, of course, washing the dishes and paying the bills and raising our children. And
yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I want to dedicate this conversation to everybody who has been, if you are listening, you'll know who you are, who's been on PCCY, which is the program that we're just ending today. Because I feel so strongly, Lizzie, that group of 18 people plus the six of us who've been guiding this year, that situation has really flowed into and given rise to this conversation today. So I feel very grateful for all of them and all of us. And to you, of course, and to everyone who's listening. So thank you so much for being with us. And we are planning on being back next week. And if you are one of the people who join us live in our Facebook group on a Sunday morning, I think in all likelihood, we will be here at our usual time of 9 a.m. UK. And we will really look forward to being with you then.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you, everybody. See you next week. Bye-bye.